To begin.
Are you watching closely?
To begin.
Clytus, I'm bored.
How to start?
What plaything can you offer me today?
Welcome to The First Syllable, a show that a handful of people listen to. I imagine this show is a show that has an audience later. I think I said this last week or the week before. I record these things as if they exist, as in I talk about writing Four Finger Discount, assuming Four Finger Discount exists as a book in a bookstore where you can go buy it and read it. And I talk about death, death, death as if it's a movie that exists that you can watch. So this is a podcast whose real audience is later, and that doesn't make any sense. Now, it's hard to plan for that. Also, from week to week, it's hard to update, but I don't want to do it less often unless I just let it go away, like take a break. So I do like once a month, here's an update on what's going on. It's not that exciting, and I don't have to force little things to talk about. Like today, I'm going to talk about the days of the week. You'll know what I mean in a moment. But first, I was thinking, as I was getting ready to record, about villainy. Because yesterday, when I was in the car on the way home from work, I believe it was, where I was like, ooh, I should record a thing. I was thinking of doing a movie review. Like, in the vein of, like, turning on my webcam, recording myself, reviewing, which would be weird, because visually, the mic's up in front of me, so it ain't great. Wouldn't be a good visual. I'm not going to mic with the... What's it called? The... That the filter thing. So you don't hear the poo sounds and all that. Anyway, villainy. What I wanted to review was Wish. Because I watched Wish on Sunday, Saturday, I don't know, a few days ago. At the time of this recording. It was finally streaming for not $19.99. And it's not that it's bad. It's not bad. It just avoids being good by being deliberately repetitive redundant. It builds its plot around references to previous Disney animated films. And that's a choice. It's for the 100th anniversary of Disney. This is the film they made that references all the others and also serves as a sort of prequel to all of them, I guess. I don't know if that technically works timing-wise, but it's not like they're all real historical accounts. But some of that I really wanted to nitpick because, like, having... what's her name? Asha has seven friends. Those seven friends are deliberately modeled, and I don't mean physically, though one is quite short, on the seven dwarfs. Is there payoff to that? No. Is it important that she has seven friends? No. All that really matters is, like, two of them? I don't remember any of their names, but Doc, who is the only one we see actually doing work, even though they seem to hang out in the kitchen like they all work in a castle or something. I don't know. I don't even know why she has these friends. Why do they know each other? And that's a problem. Like, I was just, the last couple months, writing death, 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 and it's like, how do these people know each other? And like, well, there's an implication that they, since they're driving to a vacation together, they do know each other. Do we need to know why they know each other? Not necessarily. Do they go to school together? Yes. Do we have to say that? No. But, this is the problem. You introduce seven friends in a single scene. By the way, they're introduced all at once. This is me grinning because death, death, death is the egregious example of so many of these problems. But deliberately so. And I do think on a rewrite, I could reduce the cast slightly. I could take out three or four characters by combining a couple roles. And so could Wish. So could Wish. The friends don't matter. Like, yes, Grumpy's Grumpy. Yes. Whichever the fuck one he aligns with, the one who turns on them all and makes everything go south toward the end of the movie, does that. So he has a plot-driven role. And Doc is useful. She's the one who talks the most to Asha. Sneezy serves no purpose. And other two, I don't even know what. They don't even do a comedic thing that they sneeze. And almost none of the characters are interesting. Almost none of them have any depth, including Asha. Don't know what she wants. She wants to work with the king / wizard guy thing. For some reason. Does she get an I Want song? Wow. See, the songs are so forgettable that I'm not even sure. You know, Little Mermaid, we know what Ariel wants. She gets a whole song singing about the world and how she wants to explore it and be different and live a different life. And we understand her.
Is he gone?
Who's the I Want Adventure in the Great Blood somewhere?
Can you imagine? He asked me to marry him. Me, the wife of that boorish, brainless... Madame Gaston, can't you just see it? Madame Gaston, his little wife. No, sir, not me, I guarantee it. I want much more than this provincial life. I want adventure in the great wide somewhere. I want it more. It might be grand to have someone understand. I want so much more than they've got planned.
Anyway, like, we understand. Musicals should have I Want songs. We should know what they're doing. That being said, I got into this one thinking about villainy because I don't know why the king is bad. I'm not saying he isn't bad, I'm saying I don't know why he turned that way. Why did he start storing everyone's wishes? In the present, he's already bad, and so when he says Asha's grandfather's wish is dangerous, it's because he's already delusional, but what? How did he get there? And then I was like, well, do we understand villains in most of the stories? I mean, I guess we understand Scar. We don't really understand the witch in Snow White, I don't think. No. We don't understand. We absolutely understand Gaston. He gets essentially his own I Want song. Asha and the king, whose name I can't even remember, share a song that reads like a love song, but they're singing about wishes, except they're not, because the lyrics could work just as well as them singing about each other. And apparently in an earlier version of the script, Asha and Star was more personified, and there was like a romance there, and the queen was also evil along with her husband, and I don't know why the queen necessarily turns on him. She doesn't have a lot of personality other than that she's concerned he's turning evil because he's got a bad book, and he pulls that book out, and it's all so by the numbers basic. And if you're going to have a villain, we should understand the villain. In Four Finger Discount, for example, there isn't really a villain. There is a sort of antagonism in the relationship between Odds and her parents, especially her mother. And we understand the reason that Odds had to run away and why she has to go back to the house and get her finger. Anyone listening to just this episode would be like, what? But yes, that's the plot. There's not a villain. The villain is essentially social expectations. And I think death is a much weirder thing in that it definitely has a villain. But the motivation is so generic and plain, and that's a choice. Because the movie, death is aping slasher films. And in a slasher film, we just have to know that this person is here for some sort of revenge. Generally a slasher film, they're out for revenge or avenging some sort of ideal. Often, when it comes to less revenge and more avenging an ideal, it's sexist and reductionist, you know. What was the one I just watched a few nights ago where the guy kept killing women that were independent? See, I asked that question, which one was it? And it's so many of them that I'm not sure. And death, 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 they say outright why Benny kills people and, or no, we find out why he killed the first people he killed. We don't know why he comes back, why he kills anyone else. Basically, he kills every 7 years, he kills everyone who's near the house. Or tries to. But the original one is a basic jealousy, betrayal, vengeance. His best friend and his fiance have an affair and he catches them. So he kills them both and for some reason also kills her family, leaving the house empty. And it's that house that is the setting, years later. I was thinking about what death, death, death is about. Why did I write a slasher film? I like slasher films. Slasher films are generally... I don't know, generally. Good slasher films. Good I'm being reductionist and it's hard. You can boil a lot of slasher films down to a sort of conservative worldview in which people who do bad things get punished, people who are studious and upright, virginal, can fight back against the forces of darkness and can be okay. They're feminist and at the same time a reaction to feminism, where this murderous urge has to be overcome. Death, death, death is not really that? I mean, structurally it kind of is, except, see, I don't want to tell you who lives, but in the final scene, the person who is driving away in the car, I talked about this last week, she is very in charge. There's a few characters in the story that are very... Actually, almost all of them are female as well. Yeah. A lot of the dialogue is the young women of the cast, not the men. Or the boy, because Marty's only 12. Marty is sort of a main character. Kitty is a main character. Ed is important. Susie's important. Polly is absolutely a go-getter, getting things done. I don't think the story of Death, Death, Death is a slasher film. It's something else, and that's also on purpose, because it is aping a slasher film, but also deliberately deconstructing and demolishing, remodeling, deconstructionist, reconstructionist sort of story. So does it play with the themes properly? Does it have a purpose? On its own, I'm not sure. Tying into my notion of what Death, Death, Death Part 2 is about and what Death, Death, Death Part 3 is about, it becomes a little bit more so, but it also gets muddled in that our protagonists aren't the best people. We essentially have at the end of Death, Death, Death 2 survivors. In Death, Death, Death Part 2, those two survivors come back to the house years later. Because of timing, they don't come back 7 years later, they come back 14 years later, and they bring some other people in an attempt to fight back and destroy the house. And I guess in a way it's about that. If you go together, is death, 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 the title, you know, the inevitable, three times, we're all gonna die. Death, 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 part two. Yes, but couldn't we try to fight it off for a while? Like, yes, the world is too big for us. Yes, the world is powerful and will step on us and knock us down. But also, under the right circumstances, we can take back some control. And Death, Death, Death Part 3 is, yeah, you can fight back, but what if that still fails? It's not a slasher film. The trilogy of the three is not slasher. It's formatted as slasher. It plays on the tropes of slasher, but it is more of an existential horror. Which, really, the original Halloween had a lot of that as well. Especially in the script, that there is often wind associated with Michael showing up, and Michael is more of a force of nature than a character. Benny has no personality in Death, Death, Death. We will see him in a flashback in Death, Death, Death Part 2, and we will see what he was like when he was alive. And we'll see more of him in Death, Death, Death Part 3. But up front, I mean, think about Pamela Voorhees at the end of the original Friday the 13th. She shows up and has to monologue to explain who she is.
Oh, Steve should never have opened this place again. There's been too much trouble here. Did you know that a young boy drowned the year before those two others were killed? The counselors weren't paying any attention. They were making love while that young boy drowned. His name was Jason.
I was working the day that it happened, preparing meals. Here, I was the cook. Jason should have been
watched
every minute. He was... He wasn't a very good swimmer. We can go now, dear.
I think we should wait for Mr. Christie.
Oh, that's not necessary.
I don't understand.
I am Jason. You see, Jason was my son. And today is his birthday.
Where's Mr. Christie?
Oh, I couldn't let them open this place again. Could I? Not after what happened. Oh, my sweet, innocent Jason. My only child. Jason.
I imagine a better, more constructed version of that film where Pamela is one of the, like, she's the kitchen worker and she's there from the start. Like, when the other counselors show up, they meet her and they understand her. Maybe even they know, oh, that's the mother of the kid who died. Or maybe they don't know. They couldn't know that. Because if they know that, it's too obvious who the killer is. Because vengeance. So we have to have a better... I imagine a Friday the 13th, it's more of a whodunit slasher, and I don't know if that works. But also imagine Jason in the second one. We get a little campfire monologue explaining his motivations, but otherwise he's just this thing that shows up and kills people. That's Benny. He's also a deliberate echo of, not echo of, a response to America and war, because his backstory ties specifically into, I think timing-wise, it's the Korean War, where he was injured. His best friend was actually injured worse and came home early, which is what led to the affair between Hank and Martha. And then Benny finally comes home when he is injured. No, it's not Korea. It's early Vietnam. Yeah. Actually, I had to do some research on the timing of that. When did we have active soldiers in Vietnam? When did we have active soldiers leaving? Like, the latest ones in Korea, the earliest ones in Vietnam, to see where you could tie in. But also, it didn't need to be too specific in the script, because they don't know. And I make a point of it. When, who's telling the story? It's Charlie telling the story, right? No, Charlie's the one who asked the question. Who's telling the story? Is it Will? No, it's not Will. Will is off watching television. He's not there for this. Oh man, I forgot. Anyway, the guy who's telling the story says that he came back from war, and Charlie's like, what war? He's like, it doesn't matter. Because it doesn't matter. What matters is he was sent off to war. It's this masculine, idealized violence that's okay and it's approved. And he comes back damaged. So I'm playing on old film tropes. You know, he's not an escaped mental patient, but he is a man who's damaged. And one of the characters deliberately refers to his incel energy, which I had to double check when did he first use the word incel. Doing research for the script for Death, Death, Death was fun. Like, how do they reference this kind of thing in people talking about Lord of the Rings? In 85, Marty is reading The Hobbit, so he and Ed talk about The Hobbit. In 99, Charlie is excited about Lord of the Rings, the films. In 2013, someone talks about the Desolation of Smaug. And their deliberate repetition of references about the timelessness of these characters interacting with pop culture, interacting with literature, interacting with other stories, because, I mean, that's why they named them after real people. I was going to name them after characters from other movies. I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. I might do that in the second one. There's a deliberate, I have a list of colleges from slasher films, fraternities and sororities from slasher films and psychics from slasher films. And I may combine those characters, like mix and match them, for the main cast of Death, Death, Death Part 2, who are a bunch of quote-unquote psychics recruited to go to the house. And it's... I was going to talk about the days of the week, wasn't I? Now this episode's gotten long and I don't have time to edit it. I'll just list them. Maybe I'll cut out the reference to the days of the week entirely. No, I won't cut it out because I'll let you know that was what I was going to talk about today. Maybe if I remember, I'll talk about them next week. There's a lot going on. I've mentioned it. I had an 8-week class starting and it's 4 days a week in the morning. Like yesterday, I went to that class. I got back. I literally had like half an hour at home before I had to leave again to go to a different class. So I wasn't getting any writing or rewriting done. I kind of just had some lunch and sat down for a moment. Today, Tuesday, April 9th, so just a few days ago, if you're listening to this right away, is the day where I have a little more time, and it's basically going to be the day that I edit and record. So, not getting any writing or rewriting done today. Tomorrow will be the same as yesterday, half hour break in between. Thursday would be a little longer break, so I might get something done, but probably that's going to be whatever editing I have left, like editing this. I'm recording it today, so I'm going to have to edit on Thursday. Friday, I have class in the morning, and then probably Friday afternoon, going to be errands. Going to some store or another, depending on the week. This Saturday, I got D&D. I already had to prep it. Usually, I'd prep on Friday. I had to prep it on Sunday, and I was only able to prep it on Sunday because my students hadn't turned in their rough drafts as they were supposed to so that I could grade those on Sunday. A few had, but not enough. And I gotta leave for class in a bit, and I don't know what we're doing in class today because I think we may have already done the fairy tale discussion, which I wanted to do on the schedule today before their next speech, and it's all a mess. But I am doing a lot of prep stuff. The days of the week thing last night. I have some new notes, just general Basara stuff, names of things. Second notes file for Chase Two Rabbits. And I'm still building up details. That is the next big thing I want to write, but I hope to get some rewriting done. I figure after this week, once I settle into the new schedule, it'll get a little easier. But right now, it's chaos. Also, if you're listening to this and you want to read the draft of Death, 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 message me and let me know. There's two people who have a copy of right now of the PDF, and neither one's read it yet. I need someone to read it and let me know if there's any glaring issues structurally or how the character... I know there's too many characters, but that's partly deliberate and can also be reduced a little bit. Essentially, I have to reduce it evenly-ish. Take away someone from 85, someone from 99, someone from 2013. Maybe a second person from any one of those. I can't do much with 99, because I swear 99 cast is 5 people. 4 people? It's the smallest of the 3 groups. Yeah. But no, I don't understand why the king in the Wish is evil. I don't know why he created... We get a backstory at the beginning where he founded this island, little kingdom, to welcome everybody. But then, for some reason, and maybe the narration explained it, I hated the narration, I hated the songs, I hated so much of the exposition. It was so generic and poorly done. People have said in reviews, this feels like it was written by AI, and I'm like, I almost believe it. But I don't know why the king went from, hey, this is a place that accepts everybody, to, oh, it accepts everybody, but it's also going to take away their dreams. So they don't try to do anything with their lives. For reasons. I feel like we have an evil king who has a library full of magical tomes, including one forbidden one. There's a more interesting backstory there than there is the story of Asha trying to stop him with the help of a star. Although the star was adorable. It was a chaotic little ball of energy and was probably the best character in the movie, and it didn't even say anything. Go figure. Wish. It ain't awful. It's just not very good.
Cut.
You're still here? It's over.
Stuff that dreams are made of.
It's a passport.
Go home.
To another world.
Go.